This play is called Our Town. It was written by Thornton Wilder. The name of the town is Grover's Corners, New Hampshire, just across the Massachusetts line in the United States of America. Latitude, 42 degrees, 40 minutes. Longitude, 70 degrees, 37 minutes. The first part of the play shows a day in our town. The day is 7 May, 1901. The time is just before dawn. The sky is beginning to show some streaks of light over in the east there, behind our mountain. The morning star always gets wonderful bright the minute before it has to go, doesn't it? Well, I better tell you how our town lies so you can picture it in your mind. Over there to the right is Main Street. Back beyond is the railway station. Polish towns across the tracks and some Canuck families. Over there to the left is the Congregational Church. Across the streets, the Presbyterian. Catholic Church is over beyond the tracks. On Main Street, there is the town hall and post office combined. Jails in the basement. And then there's a row of stores. Hitching posts and horse blocks in front of them. First automobiles going to come along in about 5 years. Belong to Banker Cartwright, our richest citizen. Lives in the big white house up on the hill. Right in the middle of Main Street there is the grocery store. And close by to it, Mr. Morgan's drugstore. Most everybody in town manages to look into those two stores once a day. Public schools over yonder. High schools still further over. Over on the right, right close to us here, is our doctor's house, Doc Gibbs. Next door is Mr. Webb's. Now, in those days, back in 1901, that is, our newspaper come out twice a week. The Grover's Corners Sentinel. Mr. Webb's the editor. It's a nice town, you know what I mean? Nobody very remarkable ever come out of it, as far as we know. The earliest tombstones in the cemetery up there in the mountains say 1670 to 1680. They're Grovers and Cartwrights and Gibbses and Herseys. Same names as are around here now. Well, as I said, it's about dawn. The only lights on in town are in the cottage over by the tracks where a Polish mother's just had twins. And in the Joe Crowell house where Joe Jr.'s getting up so as to deliver the paper. And in the train depot where Shorty Hawkins is getting ready to flag the 545 for Boston. Yep, there she is. Now, naturally, out in the country, all around, they've been lights on for some time, what with Milkins and so on. But town people sleep late. So, another day's begun. There's Doc Gibbs coming down Main Street now, coming back from that baby case over in Polish Town. Oh, he looks tired. Got that call at 1:30 this morning. And here comes Joe Crowell, Jr., moving from house to house, delivering Mr. Webb's Sentinel.
Morning, Doc Gibbs.
Morning, Joe.
Somebody been sick, Doc?
Oh, just some twins born over in Polish Town.
Do you want your paper now?
Yes, I'll take it. How's your knee, Joe?
Oh, fine, Doc. I never think about it at all. Only, like you said, it always tells me when it's going to rain.
What's it telling you today? Gonna rain?
No, sir.
Sure?
Yes, sir.
Me ever made a mistake?
No, sir.
And Doc Gibbs stands there in the street, glancing at his paper. I want to tell you something about that boy, Joe Crowell, there. Joe was awful bright. Graduated from high school here, head of his class. So he got a scholarship to Massachusetts Tech. Graduated head of his class there, too. Was all wrote up in the Boston paper at the time. Going to be a great engineer, Joe was. But the war broke out and he died in France. All that education for nothing. Doc Gibbs died in 1930. The new hospital's named after him. Mrs. Gibbs died first, a long time ago, in fact. She went out to visit her daughter, Rebecca, who married an insurance man in Canton, Ohio, and died there. Pneumonia. But her body was brought back here. She's up in the cemetery there now, and with a whole mess of Gibbses and Herseys. She was Julia Hersey before she married Doc Gibbs in the Congregational Church over there. In our town, we like to know the facts about everybody.
Giddy up, Bessie. What's the matter with you today?
Now here comes Howie Newsom delivering the milk.
Morning, Doc.
Morning, Howie.
Oh, now. You're out early. Somebody sick?
There are twins. Over to Mrs. Garislavsky.
Twins, huh? Mm. This town's getting bigger every year.
Going to rain, Howie?
No, no. Fine day. It'll burn through.
Hello, Bessie.
How old is she, Howie?
Going on 17.
Oh, oh.
Bessie's all mixed up about the route ever since the Lockhart stopped taking their quart of milk every day. She wants to leave him a quart just the same. Keeps scolding me the whole trip.
Good morning, Howie.
Good morning, Mrs. Gibbs. Doc's just there in the street fussing over Bessie.
Is he? Seems like you're late today.
Yes. Something went wrong with the separator. Uh-huh. Don't know what it was. Doc?
Howie?
Go on, Bessie.
George! Rebecca! Time to get up! Oh. Everything all right, Frank?
Yes. I declare, easy as kittens.
Bacon will be ready in a minute. Sit down and drink your coffee. You can catch a couple hours' sleep this morning, can't you?
Mrs. Wentworth's coming at 11. Yes, I know what it's about, too. Her stomach ain't what it ought to be.
All told, you won't get more than 3 hours' sleep. Frank Gibbs, I don't know what's going to become of you. I do wish I could get you to go away someplace and take a rest. I think it would do you good. I declare, you've got to speak to George. Seems like something's come over him lately. He's no help to me at all. I can't even get him to cut me some wood.
Is he sassy to you?
No, he just whines. All he thinks about is that baseball. George! Rebecca! You'll be late for school! George!
George! Look, sir!
Yes, Bob?
Don't you hear your mother calling you? I guess I'll go upstairs and get 40 winks.
Don't make a noise. Your father's been out all night and needs his sleep. I washed and ironed the blue gingham for you special.
Oh, I hate that dress.
Oh, hush up with you.
Every day I go to school dressed like a sick turkey.
Now, Rebecca, you always look very nice.
Oh, Mama, you're so bad,
Nate. I'll come up and slap the both of you. That's what I'll do.
You hear that whistle? We've got a factory in our town, too. Makes blankets. Cartwright's on it. And it brung him a fortune.
Emily! Wally! 7 o'clock!
That's Mrs. Webb, next door, getting her breakfast, too.
Emily! Wally, you'll be late for school! Ah, children, now, I won't have it. Breakfast is just as good as any other meal, and I won't have you rushing down and gobbling like wolves. It'll stunt your growth, that's a fact. Emily, sit up straight. Put your book away, Wally.
Oh, Ma, by 10 o'clock, I gotta know all about Canada.
You know the rules as well as I do. No books at table. As for me, I'd rather have my children healthy than bright.
I'm both, Mama. You know I am. I'm the brightest girl in school for my age. I have a wonderful memory.
Eat your breakfast, Emily.
Yes, Ma.
Oh, yes. Emily's bright, all right. No doubt about that. Popular, too. Everybody likes Emily. Some more than others, as you'll see. You keep her healthy, Mrs. Webb. Meanwhile, next door in the Gibbs kitchen, Mrs. Gibbs is seeing to her brood. Young George, it seems, is looking for a raise in his weekly allowance.
Well, I'll speak to your father about it when he's rested, George. Seems to me 25 cents a week is enough for a boy your age. I declare I don't know how you spend it all.
Oh, Ma, I got a lot of things to buy.
Strawberry phosphates, that's what you spend it on.
I don't see how Rebecca comes to have so much money. She has more than a dollar.
I've been saving it up. Gradually.
Well, dear, I think it's a good thing to spend some every now and then.
Mama, do you know what I love most in the world?
Hmm?
Do you?
money.
Eat your breakfast.
Oh, Mama, there's the first bell.
I don't want any more. I gotta go.
Well, tell Miss Foster I send her my best congratulations. Can you remember that?
Yes,
you look real nice, Rebecca. Pick up your feet.
So the day begins in our town. Now the ladies are free to get on with their own business. At the Gibbs' back door is an arched trellis covered with vines and flowers. Out beyond is Mrs. Gibbs' garden. Corn, peas, beans, hollyhocks, heliotrope, and a lot of burdock. Mrs. Webb's got a garden, too. Just like Mrs. Gibbs's, only it's got a lot of sunflowers. And a big butternut tree. Mrs. Gibbs got a chicken pen, too.
Here, chick, chick, chick.
No, go away, you. Go away. What's the matter with you? Fight, fight, fight. That's all you do.
Morning, Julia. Oh,
good morning, Myrtle. How's your cold?
Well, I still get that tickling pain in my throat. I told Charles I didn't know if I'd go to choir practice tonight. It wouldn't be of any use.
Oh, have you tried singing over your voice?
Yes, but somehow I can't do that and stay on the key. While I'm resting myself, I thought I'd string some of these beans.
Here, let me help you. Beans have been good this year.
I've decided to put up 40 quarts if it kills me.
Oh,
the children say they hate them, but I notice they're able to get them down all winter.
Now, Myrtle, I've got to tell you something, because if I don't tell somebody, I'll burst.
Why, Julia Gibbs?
Here, give me some of these beans. Myrtle, did one of those second-hand furniture men from Boston come to see you last Friday?
No.
Well, he called on me. At first, I thought he was a patient waiting to see Dr. Gibbs. And he wormed his way into my parlor. And Myrtle Webb, he offered me $350 for Grandmother Wentworth's highboy as I'm sitting here.
Why, Julia Gibbs.
He did. That old thing. Oh, it was so big, I didn't know where to put it. I almost give it to Cousin Hester Wilcox.
Well, you're going to take it, aren't you?
I don't know.
You don't know? $350? What's come over you?
Well, if I could get the doctor to take the money and go away someplace on a real trip, I'd sell it like that. You know, Myrtle, it's been the dream of my life to see Paris, France. I don't know. It sounds crazy, I suppose, but for years I've been promising myself that if we ever had the chance...
How does the doctor feel about it?
Well, I did beat about the bush a little and said that if I got a legacy, that's the way I put it, I'd make him take me someplace.
What did he say?
You know how he is. I haven't heard a serious word out of him since I've known him. No, he said it might make him discontented with Grover's Corners to go traipsing about Europe. Better let well enough alone, he says. Every 2 years, we make a trip to the battlefields of the Civil War, and that's enough treat for anybody, he says.
Well, if that second-hand man's really serious about buying it, Julia, you sell it. And then you'll get to see Paris, all right. Just keep dropping hints from time to time. Well, that's how I got to see the Atlantic Ocean, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry I mentioned it. Only it seems to me that once in your life before you die, you ought to see a country where they don't talk in English and don't even want to.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you very much. Now, we're going to skip a few hours. But first, we want a little more information about the town. Kind of a scientific account, you might say. So I've asked Professor Willard of our state university to sketch in a few details of our past history here. Professor Willard? A few brief notes, thank you, Professor. Unfortunately, our time is limited.
Oh, yes. Let me see. Grover's Corners lies on the old Pleistocene granite of the Appalachian Range. I may say it's some of the oldest land in the world. We're very proud of that. Now, anthropological data. Early Amerindian stock. Cotahatchee tribes. No evidence before the 10th century of this era. Now entirely disappeared. Possible traces in three families. Migration towards the end of the 17th century of English brachiocephalic blue-eyed stock, for the most part. Since then, some Slav and Mediterranean...
And the population, Professor Willard?
Within the town limits, 2,640.
Just a moment, Professor.
Oh, yes, indeed. The population at the moment is 2,642. The postal district brings in 507 more, making a total of 3,149. Mortality and birth rates constant.
Thank you very much, Professor. We're all very much obliged to you, I'm sure.
Not at all, sir. Not at all.
Now, the political and social report. Editor Webb. Mr. Webb?
He'll be here in a minute. He just got his hands off me to begin.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Webb.
Oh,
Mr. Webb is publisher and editor of the Grover's Corner Sentinel. That's our local paper, as you know. Here he is.
Well, I don't have to tell you that we're run here by a board of select men. All males vote at the age of 21. Women vote indirect. We're lower middle class, sprinkling of professional men, 10% illiterate laborers. Politically, we're 86% Republicans, 6% Democrats, 4% socialists, rest indifferent. Religiously, we're 85% Protestants, 12% Catholics, rest indifferent.
Have you any comments, Mr. Webb?
Very ordinary town, if you ask me. A little better behaved than most, probably a lot duller. But our young people here seem to like it well enough. 90% of them graduating from high school settle down right here to live, even when they've been away to college.
Is no one in the town aware of social injustice and inequality?
Oh yes, everybody is. Something terrible. Seems like they spend most of their time talking about who's rich and who's poor. I don't know. I guess we're all hunting like everybody else for a way the diligent and sensible can rise to the top and the lazy and quarrelsome can sink to the bottom. But it ain't easy to find. Meanwhile, we do all we can to help those that can't help themselves, and those that can, we leave alone. Are there any other questions?
Mr. Webb, is there any culture or love of beauty in Grover's Corners?
Well, there ain't much, not in the sense you mean. Come to think of it, there's some girls that play the piano at high school commencement, but they ain't happy about it. No, there isn't much culture. But maybe this is the place to tell you that we've got a lot of pleasures of a kind here. We like the sun coming up over the mountain in the morning, and we all notice a good deal about the birds. We pay a lot of attention to them. And we watch the change of the seasons. Yes, everybody knows about them. But those other things, you're right, there ain't much. As for books, Robinson Crusoe and the Bible. Music, Handel's Largo, we all know that. And painting, Whistler's Mother. Those are just about as far as we go.
Thank you, Mr. Webb. Now, we'll go back to the town. It's early afternoon. All 2,642 have had their dinners, and all the dishes have been washed. There's an early afternoon calm in our town, a buzzing and a humming from the school buildings, only a few buggies on Main Street, the horses dozing at the hitching posts. You all remember what it's like. Doc Gibbs is in his office, tapping people and making them say, "Ah." Mr. Webb's cutting his lawn over there. One man in 10 thinks it's a privilege to push his own lawnmower. Oh, no, sir, it's later than I thought. There are children coming home from school already.
I've got to go home and help my mother. I promise.
Emily! Mark Simply! Who do you think you are today?
Papa, you're terrible. One minute you tell me to stand up straight, and the next minute you call me names. I just don't listen to you.
Golly, I never got a kiss from such a great lady before.
Papa.
I'm parched. I'm going inside for some of your mother's lemonade. You coming?
In a minute.
Okay.
I got it!
Excuse me, Mrs. Forrest.
You've got no business playing baseball on Main Street.
Awfully sorry, Mrs. Forrest. Hello, Emily.
Hello. You made a fine speech in class.
Well, I was really ready to make a speech about the Monroe Doctrine, but the last minute, Miss Corcoran made me talk about the Louisiana Purchase instead. I worked an awful long time on both of them.
Gee, it's funny, Emily.
From my window up there, I can just see your head nights when you're doing your homework over in your room.
Why, can you?
You certainly do stick to it, Emily. I don't see how you can sit still that long. I guess you like school.
Well, I always feel it's something you have to go through.
Yeah. Emily, what do you think? We might work out a kind of telegraph from your window to mine. And once in a while, you could give me a kind of hint or two about one of those algebra problems.
Oh, I
don't mean the answers, Emily. Of course not. Just some little hint.
I think hints are allowed. So, if you get stuck, George, you whistle to me, and I'll give you some hints.
Emily, you're just naturally bright, I guess.
I figure that it's just the way a person's born.
But you see, I want to be a farmer. And my Uncle Luke says whenever I'm ready, I can come over and work on his farm. And if I'm any good, I can just gradually have it.
You mean the house and everything?
Yep.
Good afternoon, George.
Oh, good afternoon, Mrs. Webb. Well, I better be getting out to the baseball field. Thanks for the talk, Emily. So long.
So long, George.
Emily, come and help me string these beans for the winter.
Yes, Mama.
Oh, George Gibbs let himself have a real conversation, didn't he? Why, he's growing up. How old would George be?
I don't know.
Let me see, he must be 16.
Mama, I made a speech in class today, and I was very good.
You must recite it to your father at supper. What was it about?
The Louisiana Purchase. It was like silk off a spool. I'm going to make speeches all my life. Mama, are these big enough?
Try and get them a little bigger if you can.
Mama, will you answer me a question? Serious?
Seriously, dear, not serious.
Seriously, will you?
Of course I will.
Mama, am I good looking?
Well, yes, of course you are. Both my children have got good features. I'd be ashamed if they didn't.
Oh, that's not what I mean. What I mean is, am I pretty?
I've already told you yes. Now, that's enough of that. You have a nice, young, pretty face. I never heard such foolishness.
Mama, you never tell the truth about anything.
I am telling you the truth.
Mama, were you pretty?
Yes, I was, if I do say it. I was the prettiest girl in town next to Mamie Cartwright.
But, Mama, you've got to say something about me. Am I pretty enough to get people interested in me?
Oh, Emily, you make me tired. Now, stop it. You're pretty enough for all normal purposes. Now, come along now and bring that bowl with you.
Mama, you're no help at all.
Emily, where?
Thank you. That'll do. We'll have to interrupt again here. Thank you, Mrs. Webb. Thank you, Emily. There are some more things we want to explore about this town. I think this is a good time to tell you that the Cartwright interests have just been building a new bank in Grover's Corners. Had to go to Vermont for the marble, sorry to say. And they've asked a friend of mine what they should put in the cornerstone for people to dig up 1,000 years from now. Of course, they've put in a copy of the New York Times and a copy of Mr. Webb's Sentinel. We're putting in a Bible and the Constitution of the United States, and a copy of William Shakespeare's plays. What do you say, folks? What do you think? You know, Babylon once had 2 million people in it, and all we know about them is the names of the kings and some copies of wheat contracts, and contracts for the sale of slaves. Yet every night, all those families sat down to supper, and the father came home from his work, and the smoke went up the chimney, same as here. And even in Greece and Rome, all we know about the real life of the people is what we can piece together out of the joking poems and the comedies they wrote for the theater back then. So I'm going to have a copy of this play put in the cornerstone, and the people 1,000 years from now will know a few simple facts about us, more than the Treaty of Versailles and the Lindbergh flight. See what I mean? So, people 1,000 years from now, this is the way we were in the provinces north of New York at the beginning of the 20th century. This is the way we were in our growing up, and in our marrying, and in our living, and in our dying. Well, good deal of time has gone by. It's evening. You can hear choir practice going on in the Congregational Church. Simon Stimson putting them through their paces.
Now look here, everybody. Music came into the world to give people pleasure. Get it out of your heads that music's only good when it's loud. You leave loudness to the Methodists. You couldn't beat them even if you wanted to. Now again, tenors, tenors. Thank you. Again. One, two.
Let me abide and abide.
And so it goes on. The day's running down like a tired clock. The children are at home doing their homework. George and Emily working away behind their open windows with the full moon washing the streets of our town with a pearly light.
Emily! Hello? Emily, did you get the third problem?
Which?
The third.
Why, yes, George. That's the easiest of them all.
I don't see it. Emily, can you give me a hint?
I'll tell you one thing. The answer's in yards.
In yards? How do you mean?
In square yards.
Oh, in square yards.
Yes, Josh, don't you see?
Yeah.
In square yards of wallpaper.
Wallpaper? Oh, I see. Thanks a lot, Emily.
You're welcome. Why, isn't the moonlight terrible? And choir practice going on. I think if you hold your breath, you can hear the train all the way to Contuco. Hear it?
What do you know?
Well, I guess I better go back and try to work.
Good night, Emily. And thanks.
Good night, George.
Oh, George, can you come down a minute?
Yes, Pa.
Make yourself comfortable, George. I'll only keep you a minute. George, how old are you?
Me? I'm 16, almost 17.
What do you want to do after school's over?
Why, you know, Pa, I want to be a farmer on Uncle Luke's farm.
You'll be willing, will you, to get up early and milk and feed the stock, and you'll be able to hoe and hay all day?
Sure I will. What do you mean, Pa?
Well, George, while I was in my office today, I heard a funny sound. And what do you think it was? It was your mother, chopping wood. There you see your mother getting up early, cooking meals all day long, washing and ironing, and still she has to go out in the backyard and chop wood. I suppose she just got tired of asking you. She just gave up and decided it was easier to do it herself. And you eat her meals and put on the clothes she keeps nice for you, and you run off and play baseball. Like she's some hired girl we keep around the house, but that we don't like very much. Well, I knew all I had to do was call your attention to it. Here's a handkerchief, son. George, I've decided to raise your spending money 25 cents a week. But not, of course, for chopping wood for your mother, because that's a present you give her. And because you're getting older. And I imagine there are lots of things you must find to do with it.
Thanks, Pa.
Let's see. Tomorrow's your payday. You can count on it. Probably Rebecca will feel she ought to have some more, too. I wonder what could have happened to your mother. Choir practice was never as late as this before.
It's only 8:30, Pa.
I don't know why she's in that old choir. Just about time you retired, don't you think?
Yes, Pa.
night, Martha. Good night, Mr. Foster.
Good night, Mrs. Soames.
Now, I'll tell Mr. Webb. I know he'll want to put that in the paper.
Okay.
My, it's late.
Good night.
Good night,
Irma.
Good night. Real nice choir practice, wasn't it? Myrtle Webb. Look at that moon, will you?
Potato weather for sure.
Naturally, I didn't want to say a word about it in front of those others, but now we're alone. Really, it's the worst scandal that ever was in this town.
What?
Simon Simpson.
Why, Luella Soames?
But Myrtle, to have the organist of a church drink and drunk year after year. You know he was drunk tonight?
Now, Luella, we all know about Mr. Stimson, and we all know about the troubles he's been through. And Dr. Ferguson knows, too. And if Dr. Ferguson keeps him on there in his job, the only thing the rest of us can do is just not to notice it.
Not to notice it? But it's getting worse.
No, it isn't, Luella. It's getting better. I've been in that choir twice as long as you have. It doesn't happen anywhere near so often. Oh, my. I hate to go to bed on a night like this. I'd better hurry. Those children will be sitting up all hours. Good night, Luella. Good night.
Good night, Myrtle.
Good night. Well, I'd better go, too. Can you get home safe, Luella?
It's as bright as day. I can see Mr. Soames scowling at the window now. You'd think we'd been to a dance the way the menfolk carry on. Good night, Julia.
Good night.
Late enough.
Oh, Frank, it ain't any later than usual.
And you stopping at the corner to gossip with a lot of hens.
Now, Frank, don't be grouchy. Come out and smell the heliotrope in the moonlight. Isn't that wonderful? What'd you do all the time I was away?
Oh, I read as usual. What are the girls gossiping about tonight?
Oh, well, believe me, Frank, there is something to gossip about.
Simon Stimson far gone, was he?
Worst I've ever seen him. How'll that end, Frank? Dr. Ferguson can't forgive him forever.
I guess I know more about Simon Stimson's affairs than anybody in this town. Some people ain't made for small-town life. I don't know how that'll end. But there's nothing we can do but just leave it alone. Come. Get him.
No, not yet. Frank, I'm worried about you.
What are you worried about?
I think it's my duty to make plans for you to get a real rest and change.
No.
And if I get that legacy, well, I'm going to insist on it.
Now, Julia, there's no sense in going over that again.
Frank, you're just unreasonable.
Come on, Julia. It's getting late. First thing you know, you'll catch cold. Oh, I gave George a piece of my mind tonight. I reckon you'll have your wood chopped for a while, anyway.
Oh, Frank.
No, start getting upstairs.
Oh, gee, look at this kitchen. There's always so many things to pick up, seems like. You know, Frank, Mrs. Fairchild always locks her front door every night. All those people up in that part of town do.
Oh, they're getting citified. That's the trouble with them. Hey, pass me that lamp, will you? Thank you. They haven't got anything fit to burgle, and everybody knows it.
Nine 9:30 now. Most of the house lights are out. And here comes Editor Webb, coming home after putting his newspaper to bed.
Who's that up there in the porch? Is that you, Myrtle?
No, it's me, Papa.
Emily. Why aren't you in bed?
I don't know. I just can't sleep yet, Papa. The moonlight's so wonderful. And the smell of Mrs. Gibbs' heliotrope. Can you smell it?
Yes. Haven't any troubles on your mind, have you?
Troubles, Papa? No.
Well, enjoy yourself. But don't let your mother catch you. Good night, Emily.
Good night, Papa.
want to see Jim.
Get out, Rebecca. There's only room for one at this window. You're always spoiling everything.
Let me look just a minute.
Use your own window.
Jim, but there's no moon there. George, do you know what I think? Do you? I think maybe the moon's getting nearer and nearer, and there'll be a big explosion.
Rebecca, you don't know anything. If the moon were getting nearer, the guys that sit up all night with telescopes would see it first. They'd tell about it, and it'd be in all the newspapers.
George, is the moon shining on South America, Canada, and half the world?
Well, probably is.
George.
What?
I never told you about that letter Jane Crawford got from her minister when she was sick. He wrote Jane a letter, and on the envelope, the address was like this. It said, Jane Crawford, the Crawford Farm, Grover's Corners, Sutton County, New Hampshire, United States of America.
What's funny about that?
The list is not finished. The United States of America, the continent of North America, Western Hemisphere, the Earth, the solar system, the universe, the mind of God. That's what it said on the envelope.
What do you know?
And the postman bought it just the same.
What do you know?
That's the end of the first part of the play, friends. Now 3 years have gone by. Yes, the sun's come up over 1,000 times. Summers and winters have cracked the mountains a little bit more, and the rains have brought down some of the dirt. Some babies that weren't even born before have begun talking regular sentences already, and a number of people who thought that they were ripe, young, and spry have noticed that they can't bound up a flight of stairs like they used to without their heart fluttering a little. All that can happen in 1,000 days. Nature's been pushing and contriving in other ways, too. A number of young people fell in love and got married. Almost everybody in the world gets married, you know what I mean? In our town, there aren't hardly any exceptions. Most everybody in the world climbs into their graves married. Now, the first part of the play was called The Daily Life. This part is called Love and Marriage. There's another part coming after this. I reckon you can guess what that's about. So, it's 3 years later. It's 1904. It's 7 July, just after high school commencement. That's the time most of our young people jump up and get married. Soon as they've passed their last examinations in solid geometry and Cicero's orations, looks like they suddenly feel themselves fit to be married. It's early morning, only this time it's been raining. It's been pouring and thundering. Mrs. Gibbs's garden and Mrs. Webb's drenched. All those bean poles and pea vines drenched. All yesterday, over there on Main Street, the rain looked like curtains being blown along. May begin again any minute. Javier, you can hear the 5:45 for Boston. In their houses, Mrs. Gibbs and Mrs. Webb are coming down to make breakfast just as though it were an ordinary day. I don't have to point out to the women listeners that looking back over their lives, those ladies, both of them, cook 3 meals a day. One of them for 20 years, the other for 40. And no summer vacation. They brought up 2 children apiece, washed, cleaned the house, and never a nervous breakdown. And never thought themselves hard used, either. It's like one of those Middle West poets said, you've got to love life to have life, and you've got to have life to love life. It's what they call a vicious circle. Here comes Howie Newsom delivering the milk, and there's Cy Kroll delivering the papers like his brother before.
Ooh, now. Morning, Cy. Anything in the papers I ought to know?
Nothing much. Except we're losing about the best baseball pitcher Grover's Corn has ever had, George Gibbs.
Reckon he is.
He could hit, too, and run bases.
Yep, mighty fine ball player.
Don't see how he could give up a thing like that just to get married. Would you, Howie?
Can't tell, Si. Never had no talent that way.
Good morning, Howie. You think it's gonna rain again?
Morning, Mrs. Gibbs. It rains so heavy, I think maybe it'll clear up.
I certainly hope it will.
How much did you want today?
I'm going to have a house full of relations, Howie. Looks to me like I'll need 3 of milk and 2 of cream.
My wife says to tell you we both hope they'll be very happy, Mrs. Gibbs. No, they will.
Thanks a lot, Howie. I tell your wife I hope she gets there to the wedding.
Yes, she'll be there. She'll be there if she can.
Morning, Mrs. West.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Newsom. I told you 4 quarts of milk, but I hope you can spare another.
Yes'm, and the 2 of cream.
Now, will it start raining again, Mr. Newsom?
Well, just saying to Mrs. Gibbs is how it may lighten up. But Mrs. Newsom told me to tell you as how we both hope they'll be very happy, Mrs. Webb. No, they will.
Oh, thank you. And thank Mrs. Newsom. And we're counting on seeing you at the wedding.
Yes, Mrs. Webb. We hope to get there. Couldn't miss that. Come on, Bessie.
Well, Ma, the day has come. You're losing one of your chicks.
Frank Gibbs, don't you say another word. I feel like crying every minute. Sit out and drink your coffee.
Groom's up shaving himself. Oh, there ain't an awful lot to shave. Whistling and singing like he's glad to leave us. Every now and then he says, I do, to the mirror. But it don't sound convincing to me.
I declare, Frank, I don't know how you'll get along. I've arranged his clothes and seen to it he's put warm things on. Frank, they're too young. Emily won't think of such things. He'll catch his death of cold within a week.
I was remembering my wedding morning, Julie.
Now, don't start that, Frank Gibbs.
I was the scaredest young fella in the state of New Hampshire. I thought I'd make a mistake for sure. And when I saw you coming down that aisle, I thought you were the prettiest girl I'd ever seen. Now, the only trouble was that I'd never seen you before. There I was in the Congregational Church, marrying a total stranger.
And how do you think I felt? Frank, weddings are perfectly awful things. Farces, that's what they are. Here, I've made something for you.
Why, Julia Hersey, French toast.
It ain't hard to make, and I had to do something.
How'd you sleep last night, Julia?
Well, I heard a lot of the hours struck off.
Yes. I get a shock every time I think of George setting out to be a family man. That great gangling thing. I tell you, Julia, there's nothing so terrifying in the world as a son. A relation of father and son is the darndest, awkwardest...
Well, mother and daughter's no picnic, let me tell you.
You'll have a lot of troubles, I suppose. Well, that's none of our business. Everybody has a right to their own troubles.
Yes, people are meant to go through life 2 by 2. It ain't natural to be lonesome.
Julia, do you know one of the things I was scared of when I married you?
Oh, go along with you.
I was afraid we wouldn't have material for conversation. More than it'd last us a few weeks. I was afraid we'd run out and eat our meals in silence. That's a fact. Well, you and I have been conversing for 20 years now without any noticeable barren spells.
Well, good weather, bad weather. It ain't very choice, but I always find something to say. Did you hear Rebecca stirring around upstairs?
No. Only day of the year Rebecca hasn't been managing everybody's business up there. She's hiding in her room. I got the impression she's crying.
Lord sakes! This has got to stop! Rebecca! Rebecca! Come and get your breakfast!
Good morning, everybody. Only 5 more hours to live and then...
George Gibbs, where are you going?
Just stepping across the grass to see my girl.
Now, George, you put on your overshoes. It's raining torrents. You don't go out of this house without you're prepared for it.
Oh, Ma, get the step.
George, you'll catch your death of cold and cough all through the service.
George, do as your mother tells you.
Yes, Pa.
I'm going upstairs, Mother.
Tomorrow on, you can kill yourself, George Gibbs. But while you're in my house, you'll live wife. Maybe Mrs. Webb isn't used to callers at 7 in the morning. Here, take a cup of coffee first.
No, thanks, Ma. Be back in a minute. Good morning, Mother Webb.
Oh, you frightened me.
Now, George, you can come in a minute out of the wet, but you know I can't ask you in.
Why not?
Oh, George, you know as well as I do the groom can't see his bride on his wedding day, not until he sees her in the church.
Oh, that's just superstition. Good morning, Mr. Webb.
Good morning, George.
Mr. Webb, he don't believe in that superstition, do you?
There's a lot of common sense in some superstitions, George.
Millions have followed it, George, and you don't want to be the first to fly in the face of custom.
How's Emily?
She hasn't waked up yet. I haven't heard a sound out of her.
Emily's asleep.
No wonder. We were up till all hours sewing and packing. Now, I'll tell you what I'll do. You sit down here a minute with Mr. Webb and drink this cup of coffee, and I'll go upstairs and see if she doesn't come down and surprise you. Now, there's some bacon, too, but don't you be too long about it.
Well, George, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Fine. Mr. Webb, what sense could there be in a superstition like that?
Well, you see, on her wedding morning, a girl's heads have to be full of clothes and one thing and another. Don't you think that's probably it?
Yes. I never thought of that.
And girls have to be a mite nervous on her wedding day.
I wish a fella could get married without all that marching up and down.
Every man that's ever lived has felt that way about it, George, but it hasn't been any use. It's the women folk who built up weddings, my boy. For a while now, the women have had it all their own. A man looks pretty small at a wedding, George. All those good women standing shoulder to shoulder, making sure that the knot's tied in a mighty public way.
But you believe in it, don't you, Mr. Webb?
Oh, yes. Don't you misunderstand me, my boy. Marriage is a wonderful thing. Wonderful thing. And don't you forget that.
No, sir. Mr. Webb, how old were you when you got married?
Well, you see, I'd been to college and I'd taken a little time to get settled. But Mrs. Webb, she wasn't much older than what Emily is. Age hasn't much to do with it, George. Not compared with other things.
What were you going to say, Mr. Webb?
I don't know. Was I going to say something?
Oh.
George! I was thinking the other night of some advice my father gave me when I got married. Charles, he said, Charles, start out early showing who's boss, he said. Best thing to do is to give an order, even if it don't make sense, just so she'll learn to obey.
What?
And he said, if anything about your wife irritates you, her conversation or anything, just get up and leave the house. That'll make it clear to her, he said. He said, never let your wife know how much money you have. Never.
Well, Mr. Webb,
I took the opposite of my father's advice, and I've been happy ever since. And let that be a lesson to you, George. Never to ask advice on personal matters. George, are you going to raise chickens on your farm?
What?
Are you going to raise chickens on your farm?
Uncle Luke's never been much interested, but I thought...
Bob came into my office the other day, George, on the Philo system of raising chickens. I want you to read it. I'm thinking of beginning in a small way in the backyard, and I'm going to put an incubator in the cellar.
Oh, Charles, are you talking about that old incubator again? I thought you two would be talking about things worthwhile.
Well, Myrtle, if you want to give the boy some good advice, I'll go upstairs and leave you alone.
No need for that. Come on, George. But it's time for you to go. Emily's got to come downstairs and eat her breakfast. She sent you her love, but she doesn't want to lay eyes on you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Myrtle, I guess you don't know about that older superstition.
What do you mean, Charles?
Since the cavemen, no bridegroom should see his father-in-law on the day of the wedding or near it. Now remember that.
Thank you very much, Mr. and Mrs. Webb. Now I have to interrupt again here. You see, we want to know how all this began. This wedding, this plan to spend a lifetime together. I'm awfully interested in how big things like that begin. You know how it is. You're 21 or 22, and you make some decisions. Then, whoosh, you're 70. You've been a lawyer for 50 years, and that white-haired lady at your side has eaten over 50,000 meals with you. How do such things begin? Now, George and Emily are going to show you now the conversation they had when they first knew that, as the saying goes, they were meant for one another. But before they do, I want you to try and remember what it was like to have been young, and particularly the days when you were first in love, when you were like a person sleepwalking, and you didn't quite see the street you were in, and you didn't quite hear everything that was said to you. You're just a little bit crazy. Will you remember that, please? Now, they'll be coming out of high school at 3 o'clock. George has just been elected president of the junior class, and as it's June, that means he'll be president of the senior class all next year. And Emily's just been elected secretary and treasurer. I don't have to tell you how important that is.
I can't, Louise. I've
got to
go home.
Yep.
Bye.
There they are, coming down Main Street
Emily.
Now.
Can I carry your books home for you, Emily?
Why, thank you. It isn't far.
Excuse me a minute, Emily. Say, Bob, if I'm a little late, start practice anyway. And give Herb some long high ones.
I'm awfully glad you were elected, too, Emily.
Thank you.
Emily, why are you mad at me?
I'm not mad at you.
You've been treating me so funny lately.
Well, since you asked me, I might as well say it right out. George, goodbye, Miss Corcoran.
Goodbye, Miss Corcoran.
What is it?
I don't like the whole change that's come over you in the last year. I'm sorry if that hurts your feelings, but I've got to tell the truth and shame the devil.
Change? What do you mean?
Well, up to a year ago, I used to like you a lot. And I used to watch you as you did everything, because we'd been friends so long. And then you began spending all your time at baseball. And you never stopped to speak to anybody anymore. Not even your own family, you didn't. And, George, it's a fact you got awful conceited and stuck up. And all the girls say so. They may not say so to your face, but that's what they say about you behind your back. And it hurts me to hear them say it, but I've got to agree with them a little. I'm sorry if it hurts your feelings, but I can be sorry I said it.
Gosh, I never thought that such a thing was happening to me. I guess it's hard for a fella not to have faults creep into his character.
I always expect a man to be perfect, and I think he should be.
Oh, I don't think it's possible to be perfect, Emily.
Well, my father is. And as far as I can see, your father is. There's no reason on earth why you shouldn't be, too.
Well, I feel it's the other way around. That men aren't naturally good, but girls are.
Well, you might as well know right now that I'm not perfect. It's not as easy for a girl to be perfect as a man, because we girls are more nervous.
But...
Oh, no, I'm sorry I said all that about you. I don't know what made me say it.
Emily.
Now I can see it's not the truth at all. And I suddenly feel that it isn't important anyway.
Emily, there's the drugstore. Would you like an ice cream soda or something before you go home?
Well, thank you. I would.
Good afternoon, Mr. Morgan.
Hello, George. Oh, Emily. What'll you have? Why, Emily Webb, what have you been crying about?
She just got an awful scare, Mr. Morgan. She almost got run over by that hardware store wagon. Everybody says that Tom Huckins drives like a crazy man.
Well, now, you take a drink of water, Emily. It'll all shook up. I tell you, you've got to look both ways before you cross Main Street these days. Gets worse every year. What'll you have?
I'll have a strawberry phosphate, thank you, Mr. Morgan.
No, no, Emily. Have an ice cream soda with me. Two strawberry ice cream sodas, Mr. Morgan.
Two strawberry ice cream sodas? Yes, sir. There are 125 horses in Grover's Corner this minute I'm talking to you. And now they're bringing in these automobiles. Well, the best thing to do is to just stay home. But I can remember when a dog could go to sleep all day in the middle of Main Street and nothing come along to disturb him. Well, there they are. Enjoy them.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mrs. Ellis. What can I do for you?
They're so expensive.
No, no, don't think of that. We're celebrating our election. And then do you know what else I'm celebrating?
No.
I'm celebrating because I've got a friend who tells me all the things that ought to be told me.
Oh, George, please don't think of that. I don't know why I said it. It's not true. You're...
No, Emily. You stick to it. I'm glad you spoke to me like you did. But you'll see. I'm going to change so quick. You bet I'm going to change. And, Emily, I want to ask you a favor.
What?
Emily, if I go away to State Agriculture College next year, will you write me a letter once in a while?
Oh, I certainly will. I certainly will, George. It certainly seems like being away 3 years, you'd get out of touch with things. Maybe letters from Grover's Corners wouldn't be so interesting after a while. Grover's Corners isn't a very important place when you think of all New Hampshire. But I think it's a very nice town.
The day wouldn't come when I wouldn't want to know everything that's going on here. I know that's true, Emily.
Well, I'll try to make my letters interesting.
You know, Emily, whenever I meet a farmer, I ask him if he thinks it's important to go to agriculture school to be a good farmer.
Why, George?
Yeah, and some of them say that it's even a waste of time. You can get all those things anyway out of the pamphlets the government sends out. And Uncle Luke's getting old. He's about ready for me to start in taking over his farm tomorrow if I could.
My!
And like you say, being gone all that time, in other places and meeting other people. Gosh, if anything like that can happen, I don't want to go away. Emily, I feel that you're as good a friend as I've got. I don't need to go and meet the people in other towns.
But, George, maybe it's very important for you to go and learn all that about cattle judging and soils and those things. Of course, I don't know.
Emily, I'm going to make up my mind right now. I won't go. I'll tell Pa about it tonight.
Why, George, I don't see why you have to decide right now. It's a whole year away.
Emily, I'm glad you spoke to me about that. That fault in my character. What you said was right, but there was one thing wrong in it. And that was when you said that for a year I wasn't noticing people. And you, for instance. Why, you say you were watching me when I did everything. I was doing the same about you all the time. Why, sure. I always thought about you as one of the chief people I thought about. I always made sure where you were sitting. And for 3 days now I've been trying to walk home with you. But something's always got in the way. Yesterday, I was standing over against the wall waiting for you, and you walked home with Miss Corcoran.
Oh, George, life's awful funny. Well, how could I have known that? Why, I thought...
Listen, Emily, I'm going to tell you why I'm not going to agriculture school. I think that once you've found a person that you're very fond of, I mean, a person who's fond of you, too, and likes you enough to be interested in your character. Well, I think that's just as important as college is. And even more so. That's what I think.
I think it's awfully important, too.
Emily?
Yes, George?
Emily, if I do improve and make a big change, would you be... I mean, could you be?
I am now. I always have been.
So I guess this is an important talk we've been having.
Yes. Yes.
Wait just a minute, and I'll walk you home. Mr. Morgan?
Coming!
I'll have to go home and get the money to pay you for this. It'll only take me a minute.
What's that? George Gibbs, do you mean to tell me...
Yes, but I had reasons, Mr. Morgan. Look, here's my gold watch to keep until I come back with the money.
That's all right. Keep your watch. I'll trust you.
I'll be back in 5 minutes.
I'll trust you 10 years, George. Not a day over. Got all over your shock, Emily?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Morgan. It was nothing.
Good.
I'm ready.
So long, you two.
Well, now we're ready to get on with the wedding. There are a lot of things to be said about a wedding. There are a lot of thoughts that go on during a wedding. We can't get them all into one wedding, naturally, and especially not into a wedding at Grover's Corners, where they're awfully plain and short. For a while now, the play gets pretty serious. You see, some churches say that marriage is a sacrament. I don't quite know what that means, but I can guess. It's like Mrs. Gibbs said a few minutes ago, people were made to live two by two. This is a good wedding, but people are so put together that even at a good wedding, there's an awful lot of confusion way down deep in people's minds, and we thought that that ought to be in our play, too. It's like what one of those European fellas said. Every child born into the world is nature's attempt to make a perfect human being. Well, we've seen nature pushing and contriving for some time now. We all know that nature's interested in quantity, but I think she's interested in quality, too. And don't forget all the other witnesses at this wedding. The ancestors, millions of them. Most of them set out to live two by two also. Millions of them. It's almost time now. There's Mrs. Webb. Don't see Mr. Webb. Probably off with Emily.
I don't know why on earth I should be crying. I suppose there's nothing to cry about. It came over me at breakfast this morning. There was Emily eating her breakfast as she's done for 17 years. Now she's going off to eat at someone else's house. I suppose that's it. And Emily, she suddenly said, I can't eat another mouthful. She put her head down on the table and she cried. Oh, I've got to say it. You know, there's something downright cruel about sending our girls out into marriage this way. I hope some of her girlfriends have told her a thing or two. It's cruel, I know, but I couldn't bring myself to say anything. I went into it blind as a bat myself. Oh, there's George. I better find my place. I don't know where Charles has got to. Or Emily. Oh, imagine such a joyful day, and all I can do is stand here blubbering like a baby. Oh.
Oh, God.
George, what's the matter?
Ma, I don't want to grow old. Why is everybody pushing me so?
Why, George, you wanted it.
No, Ma, listen to me.
No, George. You're a man now.
Listen, Ma, for the last time I asked you, all I want to do is to be a fella.
George, if anyone should hear you, now stop. Why, I'm ashamed of you.
What? Where's Emily?
George, you gave me such a turn.
Cheer up, Ma, I'm getting married.
Let me catch my breath a minute.
Now, Ma, you save Thursday nights. Emily and I are going to come over to dinner every Thursday night. You'll see. Ma, what are you crying for? Come on, we've got to get ready for this.
I never felt so alone in my whole life. And George over there, looking so... I hate him. I wish I were dead. Papa!
Yes.
Papa!
Emily! Now, don't get upset.
But, Papa, I don't want to get married.
Emily, everything's all right.
Why can't I stay for a while just as I am? Let's go away.
No, Emily. Now, stop and think a minute.
Well, don't you remember that you used to say, all the time you used to say, all the time, that I was your girl? Well, there must be lots of places we can go to. I'll work for you. I could keep house.
You mustn't think of such things. You're just nervous, Emily. George! George, will you come here a minute?
Why, you're marrying the best young fella in the world. George is a fine fella.
But, Papa...
Mr. Webb, I'm giving away my daughter, George. Do you think you can take care of her?
Oh, Mr. Webb, I want to. I want to try. Emily, I'm going to do my best. I love you, Emily. I need you.
Well, if you love me, help me. All I want is someone to love me.
I will, Emily. Emily, I'll try.
And I mean forever. Do you hear? Forever and ever.
Oh, come. They're waiting for us. Now you know it'll be all right. Come, quick.
Do you, George, take this woman, Emily, to be your wedded wife? To have and to hold.
It's a lovely wedding. Loveliest wedding I ever saw. Oh, I do love a good wedding, don't you? Doesn't she make a lovely bride?
I do. Do you, Emily, take this man, George, to be your wedded husband?
Don't know when I've seen such a lovely wedding, but I always cry. Don't know why it is. I always cry. I just like to see young people happy, don't you? Oh, I think it's lovely.
I now pronounce you man and wife. You may kiss the bride, young man.
I've seen over 200 couples married in my day. What, leaving it? I don't know. M marries N. Millions of them. The cottage, the go-kart, the Sunday afternoon drives in the Ford. First rheumatism, the grandchildren. The second rheumatism, the deathbed. The reading of the will. Once in a thousand times, it's interesting.
I feel a lovely couple. Oh, I've never been to such a nice wedding. I'm sure they'll be happy. I always say, happiness, that's the great thing. The important thing is to be happy.
That was the end of the second part of the play, folks. Now we start the third, the last part. This time, 9 years have gone by, friends. It's now summer 1913. Grouches and Grover's horses are rarer. Is coming into town in Fords. Everybody locks their house doors now at night. Ain't been any burglars in town yet, but everybody's heard about them. You'd be surprised, though. On the whole, things don't change much around here. Now, where I'm standing right now is certainly an important part of Grover's Corners. It's on a hilltop, a windy hilltop. Lots of sky, lots of clouds, often lots of sun and moon and stars. You come up here on a fine afternoon and you can see range on range of hills. Awful blue they are. And there below us, quite a ways down, is Grover's Corners. Yes, beautiful spot up here. Mountain laurel and lilacs. I often wonder why people like to be buried in Woodlawn and Brooklyn when they might pass the same time up here in New Hampshire. Over there on the left are the old stones. 1670, 1680, strong-minded people that come a long way to be independent. Summer people walk around there laughing at the funny words on the tombstones. Oh, it don't do any harm. And genealogists come up from Boston, get paid by city people for looking up their ancestors. They want to make sure they're daughters of the American Revolution and of the Mayflower. Well, I guess that don't do any harm either. Wherever you come near the human race, there's layers and layers of nonsense. Now, where I'm standing here is the new part of the cemetery. Here's your friend, Mrs. Gibbs. And let me see. Here's Mrs. Simpson, organist at the Congregational Church. And Mrs. Soames, who enjoyed the wedding so. You remember? Oh, and a lot of others. Yes, an awful lot of sorrow has sort of quieted down up here. People just wild with grief have brought their relatives up to this hill. Now, we all know how it is. And then time, and sunny days, rainy days and snow. We're all glad they're in a beautiful place, and we're coming up here ourselves when our fit's over. Now, there are some things we all know, but we don't take them out and look at them very often. We all know that something is eternal, and it ain't houses, and it ain't names, and it ain't earth, and it ain't even the stars. Everybody knows in their bones that something is eternal, and that something has to do with human beings. All the greatest people ever lived have been telling us that for 5,000 years, and yet you'd be surprised how people are always losing hold of it. There's something way down deep that's eternal about every human being. You know as well as I do that the dead don't stay interested in us living people for very long. Gradually, gradually, they lose hold of the earth and the ambitions they had and the pleasures they had and the things they suffered and the people they loved. They get weaned away from earth. That's the way I put it. Weaned away. And they stay down here with us while the earth part of them burns away, burns out. And all that time, they slowly get indifferent to what's going on in Grover's Corners. They're waiting. They're waiting for something that they feel is coming. Something important and great. Aren't these dead souls waiting for the eternal part of them to come out clear? Some of the things you're going to hear them say maybe will hurt your feelings, but that's the way it is. Mother and daughter, husband and wife, enemy and enemy, money and miser, all those terribly important things kind of grow pale around here. And what's left when memory's gone? And your identity. Well, now, there come some living people. There's Joe Stoddard, our undertaker, supervising the new-made grave. And, oh, my, here comes Sam Craig, a Grover's Corners boy that left town to go out west.
Good afternoon, Joe Stoddard.
Good afternoon. Afternoon. Let me see now. Do I know you?
I'm Sam Craig.
Oh, gracious sakes alive. Of all people, I should have known you'd be back for the funeral. You've been away a long time, Sam.
Yes, I've been away over 12 years. I'm in business out in Buffalo now, Joe, but I was in the East when I got news of my cousin's death, so I thought I'd combine things a little and come and see the old home. You look well.
Oh, yes, yes. Can't complain. Very sad our journey today, Samuel.
Yes.
Yes, yes. I always say I hate to supervise when a young person is taken. Well, they'll be here in a few minutes now. I had to come here early today. My son's supervising at the home.
Lots of familiar names on these stones. Oh, old Farmer McCarthy. I used to do chores for him after school. He had the lumbago.
Yes, we brought Farmer McCarthy here a number of years ago now.
Julia Gibbs. Why, this is my Aunt Julia. I'd forgotten that she... Oh, yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah, Doc Gibbs lost his wife 2-3 years ago, about this time. And today's another pretty bad blow for him, too.
Mrs. Gibbs, who is this fella?
That's my sister Carrie's boy, Sam, Simon. Sam Craig.
But he went away somewhere, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
What's he back for? Why's he here? I'm always uncomfortable when they're around.
Now, Simon.
The funny things people write. Did they choose their own verses much, Joe?
No. Not usual. Mostly the bereaved pick a verse.
It doesn't sound like Aunt Julia. There aren't many of those Hersey sisters left now. Let me see. I want to look at my father's and mother's.
Over there, with the Craigs, Avenue F.
Simon Stimson. He was organist at church, wasn't he? Drank a lot, we used to say.
Oh, nobody was supposed to know about it. You know, he'd seen a peck of trouble. Took his own life, you know.
Oh, did he?
Hung himself in the attic. No, they tried to hush it up, but of course he'd turn around. He chose his own epitaph. You can see it, there. It ain't a verse, exactly.
Why,
It's just some notes of music. What is it?
Oh, I wouldn't know. It was wrote up in the Boston papers at the time.
Joe? What did she die of?
Who?
My cousin.
Oh, didn't you know? Had some trouble bringing a baby into the world. Which was a second, though. There's a little boy about 4 years old.
And this here's her grave?
Yep. There ain't much more room over here among the Gibbses. I reckon they'll be opening up a whole new Gibbs section over by Avenue B soon. Oh, you'll have to excuse me now, Sam. I see they're coming.
Who is it they're bringing, Julia?
My daughter-in-law, Emily Webb.
Well, I declare. What did she die of, Julia?
In childbirth.
Childbirth. I'd forgotten all about that. My, wasn't life awful. And wonderful.
Wonderful, was it?
Diamond.
I remember Emily's wedding. Wasn't it a lovely wedding? I called on them at Emu Farm just before I died. Perfectly beautiful farm.
It's on the same road we lived on.
Yep, right smart farm.
I always liked that hymn.
Look, here she comes.
Hello.
Hello, Emily.
Hello, Miss Gibbs.
Hello, Mother Gibbs.
Emily.
Hello. It's raining. They've all got umbrellas.
Yeah. They'll be gone soon, dear. Just rest yourself.
It seems thousands and thousands of years since I... Oh, Papa remembered that was my favorite hymn. Oh, I wish I'd been here a long time. I don't like being new here. How do you do, Mr. Stimson?
How do you do, Emily?
Mother Gibbs, George and I have made that farm into just the best place you ever saw. We thought of you all the time. We wanted to show you the new barn and a great long cement drinking fountain for the stock. We bought that out of the money you left us.
I did.
Don't you remember, Mother Gibbs? The legacy you left us? Why, it was over $350.
Yes. Yes, Emily.
It won't be the same to George without me, but it's a lovely farm. Live people don't understand, do they?
No, dear. Not very much.
They're sort of shut up in little boxes, aren't they? I feel as though I knew them last 1,000 years ago. My boy is spending the day at Mrs. Carter's. Oh, Mr. Carter! My little boy is spending the day at your house.
Is he?
Yes, he loves it there. Mother Gibbs, we have a Ford, too. Never gives any trouble. I don't drive, though. Oh, Mother Gibbs, when does this feeling go away? Of being one of them? How long does it change? Oh, look! Father Gibbs is bringing some of my flowers to you. Oh, he looks just like George, doesn't he? Oh, Mother Gibbs, I never realized before how troubled and how in the dark live persons are. Look at him. I loved him so. From morning till night, that's all they are. Troubled. There. He's going now. They're all going.
A little cooler now than it was.
Yeah. That rain's cooled it off a little.
Those northeast winds always do the same thing, don't they?
Mm.
If it isn't a rain, it's a 3-day blow.
But, Mother Gibbs, one can go back there again into living. I feel it. I know it. Why, just then, for a moment, I was thinking about the farm. And for a minute, I was there, and my baby was there on my lap as plain as day. I can go back there and live all those days over again. Why not?
All I can say is, Emily, don't.
But it's true, isn't it? I can go back.
Yep, some have tried, but they soon come back here.
Don't do it, Emily.
Emily, don't. It's not what you think it would be.
But I won't live over a sad day. I'll choose a happy one. I'll choose the day I first knew I loved George. Oh, no. No. Oh, why should that be painful?
You not only live it, but you watch yourself live in it.
Yes?
And as you watch it, you see the thing that they, down there, never know. You see the future. You know what's going to happen afterwards.
But is that painful? Why?
That's not the only reason why you shouldn't do it, Emily. When you've been here longer, you'll see that our life here is to forget all that and think only of what's ahead and be ready for what's ahead. When you've been here longer, you'll understand.
But Mother Gibbs, how can I ever forget that life? It's all I know. It's all I have.
Oh, Emily, it isn't wise. Really, it isn't.
But it's a thing I must know for myself. I'll choose a happy day anyway.
No. At least choose an unimportant day. Choose the least important day in your life. It will be important enough.
Then it can't be since I was married or since the baby was born. I can choose a birthday at least, can't I? I choose my 12th birthday.
All right. 11 February 1899. A Tuesday. Do you want any special time of day?
Oh, I want the whole day.
We'll begin at dawn. You remember, it had been snowing for several days, but it had stopped the night before, and they had begun clearing the roads. The sun's coming up.
Oh, there's Main Street. Why, that's Mr. Morgan's drugstore before he changed it. And there's the livery stable.
Yes, it's 1899. This is 14 years ago.
Oh, that's the town I knew as a little girl. And look, there's the old white fence that used to be around our house. Oh, I'd forgotten that. Oh, I love it so. Are they inside?
Yes. Your mother will be coming downstairs in a minute to make breakfast.
Will she?
And you remember, your father had been away for several days. He came back on the early morning train.
No.
He'd been back to his college to make a speech in Western New York at Clinton.
Children! Wally, Emily, time to get out!
Mama! Where? Can I go to her?
Of course. She's in her kitchen there.
Wally! Emily! You'll be late!
Mom, I'm here! Oh, how young Mama looks. I didn't know Mama was ever that young.
Come and dress by the kitchen fire if you like, but hurry.
Mama, I can't find my blue hair ribbon anywhere.
Just open your eyes, dear. That's all. I laid it out for you special on the dresser there. If it were a snake, it would bite you.
Yes, yes.
Morning, how are you?
Listen, there's Papa.
Good morning, Mother.
How did it go, Charles?
Oh, fine, I guess. I told him a few things. Everything all right here?
Yes, can't think of anything that's happened special. Been right cold. Howie Newsom said it's 10 below over to his barn.
Yes, well, it's colder than that at Hamilton College. Students' ears are falling off. It ain't Christian. Paper have any mistakes in it?
None that I noticed. Coffee's ready when you want it. Oh, Charles, don't forget it's Emily's birthday. Did you remember to get her something?
Yes, I've got something right here in my pocket. Emily, where's my girl? Where's my birthday girl?
Oh, don't interrupt her now, Charles. You can see her at breakfast. She's slow enough as it is. Hurry up, children. 7 o'clock now. I don't want to call you again.
I can't bear it. They're so young and beautiful. Why did they ever have to get old? Mom, I'm here. I'm grown up. I love you all, everything. I can't look at everything hard enough. Sir?
Yes, Emily?
I want to be with them. I want them to see me, if only for a little while. Can I go in?
Yes, you can, if that's what you want to do, for a while.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, Mama.
Well, now, dear, a very happy birthday to my girl and many happy returns. There's some surprises waiting for you on the kitchen table.
Oh, Mama, you shouldn't have.
Oh, sir, I can't. I can't do it.
Go on. You're there now. Go on with it.
But birthday or no birthday, I want you to eat your breakfast good and slow. I want you to grow up to be a good, strong girl. That wrapped up in the blue paper is from your Aunt Perry. And I reckon you can guess who brought the postcard album. I found it on the doorstep when I brought in the milk. George Gibbs must have come over in the cold pretty early. Right nice of him.
Oh, George. I'd forgotten that.
Chew that bacon good and slow. It'll help keep you warm on a cold day.
Oh, Mama, just look at me 1 minute as though you really saw me. Mama, 14 years have gone by. I'm dead. You're a grandmother, Mama. I married George Gibbs. Mama, Wally's dead, too. His appendix burst on a camping trip to North Conway. We felt just terrible about it. Don't you remember? But just for a moment now, we're all together. Mama, just for a moment, we're happy. Let's look at one another.
That in the yellow paper is something I found in the attic among your grandmother's things. You're old enough to wear it now, and I thought you'd like it.
And this is from you. Why, Mama, it's just lovely.
And it's just what I wanted. It's beautiful.
Well, I hoped you'd like it. Hunted all over. Your Aunt Nora couldn't find one in Concord, so I had to send all the way to Boston. And Wally has something for you, too. He made it at the manual training class, and he's very proud of it. Well, your father has a surprise for you, too. I don't know what it is myself. Oh, here he comes.
Where's my girl? Where's my birthday girl?
I can't. I can't go on. It goes so fast, we don't have time to look at one another. I didn't realize. So all that was going on, and we never noticed. Take me back, up the hill, to my grave. But first, wait. One more look. Goodbye. Goodbye, world. Goodbye, Grover's Corners. Mama and Papa. Goodbye to clocks ticking, and Mama's sunflowers, and food and coffee, and new iron dresses and hot baths. And sleeping and waking up. Oh, Earth, you're too wonderful for anybody to realize you. Oh, do any human beings ever realize life while they live it? Every minute?
No. Saints and poets, baby. They do some.
I'm ready to go back.
Well, were you happy?
No, Mother Gibbs. I should have listened to you. That's all human beings are. Just blind people.
Look, it's clearing up. The stars are coming out.
Oh, Mr. Stimson, I should have listened to them.
Yes, now you know. Now you know. That's what it was to be alive. To move about in a cloud of ignorance. To spend and waste time as though you had a million years. To be always at the mercy of one self-centered passion or another. Now you know that's the happy existence you wanted to go back to. Ignorance and blindness.
Simon Stimson, that ain't the whole truth, and you know it. Emily, look at that star. I forget its name.
My boy Joel was a sailor. Know him all. He'd sit on the porch evenings and tell them all by name. Yes, sir. Wonderful.
Star's mighty good company.
Yes, it is.
Here's one of them coming.
Well, it ain't no time for one of them to be here.
Goodness sakes.
Mother Gibbs, it's George.
Dear, just rest yourself.
George.
And my boy Joel, who knew the stars, he used to say it took millions of years for that speck of light to get to the earth. Don't seem like a body could believe it, but that's what he used to say. Millions of years.
Good night. That ain't no way to behave.
He ought to be home. Mother Gibbs?
Yes, Emily?
They don't understand, do they?
No, dear. They don't understand.
Most everybody's asleep in Grover's Corners. There are a few lights on. Shorty Hawkins down at the depot has just watched the Albany train go by. And at the livery stable, somebody's setting up late and talking. Yes, it's clearing up. There are the stars doing their old, old crisscross journeys in the sky. Scholars haven't settled the matter yet, but they seem to think there are no living beings up there. Just chalk or fire. Only this one is straining away all the time to make something of itself. Strain so bad that every 16 hours, everybody lies down and gets a rest. 11 o'clock in Grover's Corners. You get a good rest, too. Good night. That play was called Our Town, and it was written by Thornton Wilder. William Roberts adapted it for the radio. I played the stage manager, getting folk off and on your wireless. My name's Ed Bishop. Here's the rest of the actors to tell you who they really are. First, the Gibbs family.
Dr. Gibbs was played by me, William Roberts.
Mrs. Gibbs by Liza Ross.
George by Ben Fairman.
And Rebecca by Teresa Gallagher.
Now, here's the Webbs.
Mr. Webb was played by me, Garrick Hagen.
Mrs. Webb by Shelley Thompson.
And Emily by Barbara Barnes.
And the other folk...
Peter Whitman played Professor Willard and Sam Craig.
Vincent Marzello, Howie Newsom, and Simon Stimson.
John Evitt, Mr. Morgan, and Joe Stoddard.
Francis Jeter, Mrs. Soames.
And Tom Bevan, the two Crowell boys, Joe and Cy.
Colin Sell was the musical director and played the organ for us. Lottie Barker was our production assistant, and Dave Johnson headed up the technical team. Our Town was a BBC World Service drama production, and it was directed by David Hitchinson.